These aren't the iPads you're looking for. Welcome to Primary Technology, the show about the tech news that matters. Today we're talking about Apple's possible partnership with Google Gemini or OpenAI and bringing that to iOS 18. Where are the new iPads? Humane released a new video about their pin walkthrough. Apple has some more legal troubles. And we're going to do a long-term review of Apple Vision Pro and the M3 MacBook Air. This episode is brought to you by all of you who support the show directly. And for that, we thank you. I'm one of your hosts, Stephen Robles. And joining me as always, my friend Jason Aiton. How's it going, Jason?
Slowly. It's going very slowly this morning.
Jason says slowly because his bandwidth is affected by the cold weather up there, apparently. And I feel like
something like that.
The juxtaposition between my bandwidth situation and what Jason was about to hotspot off one of his phones in order to record this. So you have some kind of microwave transmitter or something, right?
I had been debating between whether I should get one of those point-to-point extenders or an Ethernet cable on the ground.
That.
An Ethernet cable on the ground is certainly the ideal scenario.
Yes.
The thing is, it's 16 degrees outside right now. You can't dig anything into the ground. So that's going to have to wait just a little bit longer. So I was going to take issue with one thing, which is if you're going to have a bit, it actually has to be a bit. I take that. That is not a movie quote. Let's just be honest.
Okay, listen. Yes, if you're new to the show, I try to start every show with a movie quote. That was a little adjusted movie quote, and I've actually done two Star Wars quotes in the last as many weeks, I think. So I need to widen my quote thing. I will just say the temperature where Jason is right now, what did you say, 16 degrees?
It's actually up to 20 now, so there we go.
20 degrees, and the high where I am is 83 degrees, so just in case anyone's wondering. In almost the end of March, Jason, that's crazy.
Why don't we record this show live in person? That's what I want to know. Why don't I come to Florida every week and just record this with you?
Do it. You're a Delta triple diamond or whatever. Talked about on the bonus episode.
Yeah.
We got some 5-star review shout-outs. Want to do that, and then we're going to get into Apple and AI, Gemini, all of those things. So 5-star reviews, thank you to all of you. You get a shout out if you leave us a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcast at the top of the show. So GIS Adam, they said you need to root for the other Michigan team. I don't know what that means.
It means he's not a Michigan State fan, but I, in preparation for this, this is the only preparation I did for this entire episode, is I put on my Michigan State. and I do think, I just want to say, thank you for leaving a 5-star review. Hopefully what I'm about to say doesn't change that, except leaving that comment in the month of March is especially rich because Michigan State just made their 26th straight tournament. Tom Izzo has the longest streak, and I will just ask where the other Michigan team is right now.
Sports ball.
They're not in the tournament. Let's just say that.
Sports ball. Thank you for that. And now we're going to have two 1-star reviews. This is going to be our second 1-star
review. No.
A bunch of people wish me happy birthday in the reviews, so thank you for that. It's probably funny for people to see these reviews, be like, who's happy? Happy birthday? Anyway, Machete 818, Donkey with a bunch of names after it, Cliphead, Bulig, Poker Chris, they all said happy birthday. Ethan, thank you for this. He said no battery percentage. The no battery percentage people are coming out of the woodwork, Jason. He doesn't do battery percentage. Thank you to Elan 2020. JDoug457, also no battery percentage visible on his iPhone. I think the tables are the turntables, if you know what I mean. AdPaul R, he had some very nice comments to say. And RedPixel09, he was actually asking what we used to transcribe. So we host the show with Transistor.fm, and they have an AI transcription tool. And I do that instead of Apple Podcast built-in transcriptions, because then we get speaker labels, and you could see the other guy or Stephen Robles. But we also record with Riverside, and I might use that transcription, and you can let me know which is more accurate. But anyway, that's what we use. So let's jump into the news. There's rumors and talks going around. This is initially reported by Bloomberg that Apple is in talks with Google, possibly letting Gemini power AI features on the iPhone, possibly this summer with WWDC happening in June, iOS 18 and all that. And also other rumors that they're also talking to OpenAI, might be in negotiations with both and or trying to see which one is going to do it. Parker Ortolani actually had an interesting screenshot where he was like, wouldn't it be amazing if you could choose which LLM model powered your iPhone features, where you could choose Google Gemini or OpenAI's ChatGPT and all that. I find this fascinating. You had a great article talking about, you know, the three ways this is going to improve your iPhone experience, and we'll get to that in a second. I find this really interesting that OpenAI might power Apple's AI features in addition to Microsoft's AI features. Microsoft Copilot is literally OpenAI. Or Google Gemini? Like, I understand Apple might be behind on the whole AI LLM development and modeling for their software, but these, it just seems like two very wild partners. I mean, I can see it happening until they develop their own. This happened with Google Maps. If you remember, Google Maps was the launch partner on the original iPhone until Apple launched their own Apple Maps solution and things like that. So I don't know. What do you think? What do you think the probability is? What do you think of this?
Two things. One, I think it's actually a good sign that Apple is trying to find a partner to do this because they are far enough behind that at this point, like they just can't wait until they get it right. And as we have seen, watching these other companies do this, it's hard. It's not just a thing you can just spin up overnight. Google's been working on this even longer than OpenAI, necessarily OpenAI. I think the second thing I heard a really interesting take, I think from Ben Thompson, that Google is the only company of these really that has the scale to take on what, a 1.5 billion iPhones, right? If you just think about that, you can't just, like OpenAI, you know, has a partnership with Microsoft, but think about the increase, like how much more of a burden that would be on their compute power. And the limiting factor for all of these generative AI is compute, right? That's why they had to partner with Microsoft, because there was no way they were ever going to reach scale without that. Google really is the only other company that has the capability to take, like, just imagine what would happen if all of a sudden there's 2 billion iPhones and they're all suddenly using a generative AI feature, right? You can't, you know, Anthropic, all of these other smaller companies, there's just no way that they could take on that kind of scale. So Apple really was limited in what its options were. And you're right, it's really just OpenAI with its partnership with Microsoft or Google with Gemini.
I was just trying to pull up the stat of how many Microsoft Office users there are globally, because OpenAI and Copilot, you know, is part of that. There is 1.2 billion Microsoft Office suite users globally. I don't know how many of them have access to Copilot, but that seems like a big number too.
But all of that compute is happening on Microsoft Azure, right? Like, it's not necessarily happening. Like, OpenAI is not hosting those servers and stuff. So like the same servers that are hosting Microsoft Office are also hosting the interaction with ChatGPT. So yeah, the point is there wasn't a whole lot of options that Apple was going to have. And so I think it'll be interesting. They obviously have the huge search deal, so they're obviously friends, right? I shared with you that photo of, like, what was it? Tim Cook and Sundar Pichai having dinner. I thought that was, like, when someone posted it, it was, oh yeah, Ian Bremmer posted that. That photo is actually from like 2017, but it is still really interesting. It's like, oh yeah, these two people do know each other pretty well and have done some deals. And so, you know, it's not surprising that they would do it. I think everyone expected Apple was going to just do this on their own, but I actually think it's smart in this case to figure out a way to make it happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah. I find this photo interesting because the internet, you know, a photo like this, it did the rounds on Threads and such just a couple of days ago. And people feel, I don't know, I immediately just think it's like a recent photo. And like you said, this photo is from 2017. And that's one of the issues with context, I guess you could say, with the internet and social media. But anyway, these two are friends. Right. They do have, it's the $1 billion deal for Google Search being the default search engine on iPhone, right?
$20 billion deal.
Excuse me, $20 billion. So Google and Apple already work together and money changing hands. I wonder if Tim Cook in this picture is like, hey, listen, what if we get Google Gemini and you get search default and we just call it a wash? Just say probably not. Tim Cook would probably want Google to pay them to use Gemini as the default, because then Google Gemini would get a ton of learning data. That's the thing too, is, you know, one of the reasons why it's such a valuable arrangement for Google to have Google Search as the default search engine. One, because it's just used a ton more, because most people don't change the defaults on their phone, and so anytime anyone searches in Safari by default, it's using Google Search. But that's also a ton of data and traffic, as Google Ads will be served in those search results, but also just the data that Google gets to make Google Search even better and has put it leaps and bounds above other search engines, even like DuckDuckGo and Bing and all that kind of stuff. This is why Google is the best. Although there was a good podcast from Neelay Patel recently on Decoder about why Google Search might be getting worse over time. I haven't listened to the whole thing yet, but I thought that was an interesting take.
With Mia Soto, I think it was, who is their, like, their search Google platforms person. So yeah, I think it'll be slightly different. I think Apple will absolutely be paying for access to this at this point, mostly because it is just so expensive right now to run it. And there isn't really a way for Google to monetize it, you know, because I don't think Apple is going to be, this isn't going to be a thing. Well, I don't think that this is the type of thing where Apple is going to build it into like Apple One as a bundle where you're paying an extra $20 a month to have access to the generative AI features, because people are going to be like, no, you put it on my phone, it should just work. I shouldn't have to pay you more money. And so I do definitely think that Apple's probably going to be paying and then figuring out a way to monetize that down the road. So yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. So you had a great article talking about the ways that AI is going to or ways it will benefit or change the iPhone to make it a lot better. I did a video like months ago about this as well, because I do think there's huge implications for large language model type features on the iPhone. You had three great points here. Obviously, Siri being one of them. Jim Dalrymple from the Dalrymple Report and the website The Loop. Yeah. He's been on social media just lambasting Siri the last 2 days, basically saying he's given up using his HomePods because Siri is so bad.
Yeah, he just set him on fire. He's like, get out of here. Kick him out. So, yep.
He was really upset. And Jim Dalrymple is like a musician, longtime Apple pundit. And so the main thing he's doing is trying to play songs, which should be a very easy thing for HomePods to do by asking the voice assistant. And he just has a lot of issues with it. And I will say, my kids yell at HomePod minis all the time to try and play music, and it does not go well most of the time.
Yeah, I've turned off the listening for the wake word on all of our... Actually, I've turned it off on everything except for my watch, right? Like if I shout it out into the ether, the only thing that should be listening is my watch, partially because for a long time I was so frustrated by the fact that I could be like three rooms away and I'm like just talking to my phone and I'm like, hey, iPhone. And a HomePod, like in the living room, just is like, huh? And I'm like, I'm not talking to you. Why do you think that you should be the one that answers this?
It is frustrating. I'll be in my living room. And I also have the wake word turned off on my iPads and iPhone, and mainly do it through my Apple Watch, because I find the Apple Watch Ultra microphones and assistant is actually pretty fast to respond that way. And it's consistent in activating it.
Yep.
And so I'll be in the living room and I'll lift my watch and I'll be like, hey, iPhone. And it's my HomePod that's across the room, my HomePod mini that does exactly the same thing. It's like, what do you want? It's like, no, stop.
It's like when you're having a conversation with somebody at a coffee shop and somebody like from three tables over, you can tell they've been listening and they just start interjecting. And it's like, excuse me, what are you doing? No one invited you to this conversation. So
why are you dropping eaves? Yeah. So yes, obviously the voice assistant on all of Apple's devices could use a lot of improvement. Shortcuts is another great reason. I was looking for a link to one of my shortcut videos in your article here, but I didn't find any. So.
Ooh, well, send me one. I'll add it. I don't have a problem. But my general thesis here was like, so Shortcuts is amazing, but the functionality of Shortcuts shouldn't require you to actually use the Shortcuts app to be building them. If you had the ability to just say to your phone, hey, the example I used, and this is because this is a real world example where I had to build a shortcut to do this. Hey, make me a shortcut that turns off my outside lights every night at sundown, or turns them on every night at sundown and then turns them off 3 hours later. Like, Shortcuts can do all of that, right? But you have to go in and you have to build it. Whereas using Google Gemini as a large language model to interpret all that and to have the ability to interact with the different capabilities on your phone, I personally think that'd be amazing. Or imagine if you could just, the other example I used is, if you could just say to your phone, hey, every time I get an email with an invoice, download the attachment and put it in the receipts folder in Dropbox. That's the kind of thing that will make people like, this is super functional, way more functional than just, you know, make me a photo of the founding fathers just to see what, you know, what will come out. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Like, these are the things that people would actually use all the time. And there's so much functionality in Shortcuts that it's got to be the most underused app on the phone. Like, come on, it has to be, because most people just don't even either know it's there or know how to use it at all. So
listen, I'm going to put one of my Shortcuts videos in the show notes, because two out of the top three ways people find my videos on YouTube is Shortcuts.
Yeah.
And so there's a huge interest for it, I think, even just simple automations. And like you're saying, it is intimidating for people who have never done it. And it's, you know, there's a ton of actions behind the scenes. And Apple has a gallery with some pre-made shortcuts, but it's hard to get used to it. And the power of Shortcuts is it can probably automate your specific task, which will make your work easier. And that's why I think some of my most popular videos on the channel are Shortcuts videos. But I also think Final Cut and Xcode are two huge use cases for large language model type input and AI features. Xcode, obviously for developers, you know, autofilling certain code. I'm not a developer, so I don't know all the lingo, but Final Cut is also way behind when it comes to a lot of AI features. If you use Adobe Premiere, there's a plugin called AutoPod, which can basically take a podcast, like a video podcast like this one, and automatically cut between the video depending on who's talking, and it does it in a few seconds. And it just, boom. That's something Final Cut should be able to do automatically. It already has multicam features and plugins. Like, Final Cut should do that. Also, like transcribing the audio in Final Cut and editing it via text. Adobe Premiere can do that. Apple should do that too, just right there built in. I also feel like iWork, which is an old term, but, you know, pages, numbers, and Keynote, massive implications for that kind of stuff, especially writing in pages and then asking the prompt to help you reword something or generate more text. And then to translate that into another application, meaning if I have some bullet points in pages, maybe I'm putting together a talk, like I'm doing at Podcast Movement next week. I can select that text and ask the Apple assistant, make this into some Keynote slides with some stock imagery. Like, that's something other tools can do right now and would be extremely powerful if Apple's iWork suite, which is all Apple apps, you know, Keynote, Pages, Numbers, it'd be great if it could do that. And also, we're going to talk about Humane AI Pen in a second. One of the things I saw in their latest walkthrough was Imran, one of the co-founders, asked his AI pen, like all he did was tap it, and he said, make a spreadsheet with the top tech YouTube reviewers with subscriber count and put it all in a Google spreadsheet. And it made the spreadsheet for him. Like, I was, that's the only prompt. It was very short. And I was really impressed that he could just make that spreadsheet down and then you could download it or whatever. Numbers is right there. And while Numbers is great and can help you make charts and tables, to just be able to ask a large language model type assistant, hey, make this data into a chart. And it just does it automatically with a labeled y-axis, and it just does it, you know, that would be great. Which I do have to give a shout out, Nate, friend of the show, friend of ours personally. he sent us, this was a post that was going around on Threads, and then he sent it to us directly, but it was basically like Hall of Fame unlabeled y-axes. And it's, let me pull it up real quick. It's this actually from Spotify, and the Culture of Me posted it on Threads, unmarked y-axis. Hall of Fame, and it was Spotify reveals the number of artists generating and whatever certain amount of money, and the y-axis is just number of artists. That's all it says.
Yeah, which would be fine if it was to scale, because the problem with this chart and the reason I think it got put in there is if you happen to notice the far left bar, which is 23,400, is lower than the far right bar, which is 1,250. So it's like none of these things are at the same scale. That's the problem with this chart. Not just that poorly labeled. It's like, oh, you can make anything look like any. This is actually pretty close to the one that we looked at with Brave, you know, where it's just like, right, I would just start this chart anywhere. But except for what Spotify did is they reset the chart each time they drew the bars. It's like there's no relation whatsoever. So
exactly. So thank you, Nate, for sending that. But anyway, there's huge use cases and implications for large language model type features. I feel like it has to happen at WWDC. I mean, there's so much rumors about it. Mark Gurman has said it multiple times. iOS 18 on the iPhone. And that will be one interesting tidbit. Is it going to be iPhone only? Are we going to see AI features across the platforms like macOS, iPad, and iPhone? Or is it going to be very kind of specific under the hood use cases where Apple says the word AI, which they were kind of hesitant to do before? But Tim Cook has repeatedly said in the past year, we're going to make a lot of, I forget the exact quote, but basically we're going to really move forward with AI this year. How far across the platforms it's going to be. So
I have a prediction.
Oh boy.
I think that the main, I think, and I have no information because people wouldn't tell me this kind of thing anyway, but I think the primary focus will be on the iPhone because that's the device that 2 billion people carry around and use. And that most people, where most people will interact with this type of a thing, a large language model, generative AI. And it, I think that it will mostly be branded as so that it will be like the, that will be the, I was trying to not set off
my HomePod three rooms away just woke up.
Huh? Yeah. And that's my favorite thing is when it doesn't know what you're saying and just asks you. I'm like, you don't have to do that. Anyway, I think it will sort of like Microsoft just branded everything as Copilot, which it is nice that they branded it as a word you can say out loud without setting off people's devices. That's really nice. But anyway, that's just because Microsoft doesn't have any devices. But I think they will brand it that way. And they will, and it'll be sort of the over-encompassing, it will be more than just the, you know, current voice assistant. They will sort of expand all of its AI into that. And then I do think that they will talk about ways that are coming. I don't know that they'll be built in yet because if you look at what Microsoft did with Copilot, I agree with you that it'd be great. I don't know that I care whether it's in anything but Keynote because as we've already discussed, there's no reason to use Numbers or, I mean, Pages is fine, but like no one is really creating text documents in Pages. So what'd be better is if on your Mac, if you can say, hey, take this Google Doc that I have and turn this into a Keynote, you know, presentation using this data and just your Mac just does it. I don't think we will see that at WWDC. I think it'd be amazing, but if you just imagine that's a much bigger lift. It's not like plug in large language model and now suddenly all these things can do this. So I think it's coming, but I think that's probably the next step. I think they have to get the stuff on the iPhone first. I think they just have to get that out.
For sure. Well, I'm excited to see. We're a couple months away. Invites for WWDC should be coming soon. Apple usually announces WWDC at the end of March, sometime in April. So in the next 2 or 3 weeks, we should be hearing more, at least when WWDC is.
Yeah, they usually announce the dates, and then they give people time to start to buy tickets for developers and that kind of stuff. And then usually about 3 weeks ahead of time is when they send out the invites. So
we will see. We will see coming soon. I also want to throw this in here. Brian Tong, who was one of the early Apple Vision Pro reviewers, longtime journalist. He was at CNET a long time ago doing the Apple Byte. But he got pretty wild access to several people at Apple, including Greg Joswiak. And he just rode around in a golf cart for 40 minutes interviewing these people about the iPhone and the iPhone camera. He had filmed it all on iPhone, of course. Pretty wild level of access for Brian Tong. Congrats to him. He asked Jaws at the end what his favorite 3 iPhone models were, and I think he cheated. Should I do a spoiler? Mm. Did you watch that? Did you watch the interview?
No, I didn't, but it was funny to me because the person that you were originally showing was Kai Andrant, who's the head of iPhone product marketing, and not Jaws. I just wanted to, there you go. That's Kai Andrant. No, she's the head of, most people have probably seen her in the keynotes. It's like she does the iPhone and then Jaws does the iPhone Pro. So anyway, what were his three favorite ones?
All right, well, if you don't want to be spoiled, you could watch the last few seconds of this video and then come back. But Jaws said his favorite 3 iPhone models were the iPhone 15, the iPhone 15 Pro, and the iPhone 15 Pro Max, which is just so cheating, so Apple marketing spiel. Like, can we be real, please? Let us be
except
real.
Except even he admits that nobody likes the iPhone 15 Plus. Come on. Nobody wants that one.
I think he did mention the 15 Plus as he explained it. But anyway, that was totally cheating. Jaws, if you're listening, you need to tell us your actual real favorite 3 iPhones, which let's do real quick, Jason. Favorite 3 iPhone models, 3 generations. You can't do 3 models of the same generation, like 3 different 15s. I'm going to say, yes, iPhone 15 Pro Max, because it's the best iPhone yet, of course. But my other two, I'm going to say the iPhone 5S, because that one had the first Touch ID, and it was just extremely thin. The size was really, it was right before the 6 where the iPhones got big. And I just, one of the nicest designs still, and the camera was still flush to the back of the iPhone. So the iPhone 5S, and then actually I'll say number 1, because I still think this is one of my favorite iPhone designs. I think one of the most iconic, the iPhone 4, which was my first iPhone. You could say 4S. It was literally exactly the same. There it is. Jason got it. The iPhone 4 and 4S. I think that's number 1 when it comes to hardware design model. That was the antenna gate model where Apple literally gave away bumper cases for everyone who bought an iPhone 4 at launch, because if you held it a certain way, you lost cellular connectivity, and Steve Jobs said you were holding it wrong. But I still think it's one of the best hardware iPhones to this date. Jason, your top 3?
My antenna still doesn't work on mine. And that's why that's why the internet's so bad out here. I've been trying to tether to this iPhone.
You've been hotspotting here for.
But no, I would agree I like the 15 Pro Max because I love the 5X camera. It is just so good. I do like that it's lighter in the titanium. That's all that stuff's true. I mean, I have a lot of affection for the original iPhone. I actually still have one of those sitting right here too. But I mean, relatively speaking, this thing was not great. It was just mind blowing, right?
It was slow
and there was a lot of problems with it, but I still, this thing is light too. Wow. For having a metal, I just realized that picking it up. Anyway,
it was only had 4 gigs of memory. The thing's so light.
Yeah, that's true. You couldn't actually do it. It was actually made out of plastic. It was just a display. Anyway, I also really liked the 11 Pro. I really liked that feel. My daughter has my old 11 Pro now, and it was the bar of soap design with the slippery sides. But honestly, every time I pick that up, I'm like, this was nice. I really liked it. And I think it was the first one with the 3 camera system. So that was kind of a cool upgrade over. I don't think that the 10S, whatever had it. So anyway, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, the iPhone 11 also was like the last of the hyper thin models because it didn't, it was still rounded edges. And then once we went to iPhone 12, it started getting thicker again for more battery. But no, it's good. That's good choices. Good choices. Do you have a Series 9 or Ultra 2 Apple Watch, by the way?
I have an Ultra 2, yes. And I probably have a Series, I probably have a Series 9 in a drawer somewhere that I have supposed to review.
How's your battery life been on 10.4?
I have not noticed a difference in the battery life, which just means that it doesn't ever get low enough for me to care on my, on my watch. I will say on my phone, the battery life has been garbage lately. I don't know if the two things are related. So
yeah, something's been going on. I actually have had to put my Ultra 2 in low power mode to make it through the day. Otherwise, it goes to like 10% by mid afternoon and then dies. So there's something software going on.
Do you spend the whole day on a walking treadmill while you're at your desk or something, and it's counting steps the whole time?
No, not even that. Okay. I don't even know what's going on. But a few people have reported issues. So anyway, we'll see. Right. I want to mention as we're talking about AI, the Humane AI Pen, they released another walkthrough video. They said the first shipments of the AI Pen for those who pre-ordered. I pre-ordered on day one, so I should be getting it on April 11th. That was the drop date, they said, for the first batch of AI Pens. If you order one today, you can get it by the end of April. Might want to hold off on ordering it because, wait for the reviews to see what happens.
Right.
It was a much longer demo. It's about 18 minutes. They showed off all the different pieces of functionality and features. There are many features that are going to be coming later in a software update. Things like holding up a book or an object and asking the pen to recognize it or talk about it or search the web for it and buy it. All that's going to be coming later. There's also going to be API access for developers. That'll be coming later as well. Some of the use cases are really cool. Like I mentioned, the spreadsheet. Imran at the end asked what the AI pen thought of his fit, like the clothes he was wearing. Took a long time to actually answer, but it said it liked his fit. Now, one of the things that's very telling is every time one of the presenters, Imran, and Sam Sheffer did this too. He had a lot of short form videos recently. As soon as they ask the pen something, they keep talking about what the pen is doing. I think to kind of cover up how long it takes the pen to actually say anything. Like if you think Apple's voice assistant takes a long time to respond, like the AI pen is taking a long time. Like it's large language model type time. Because if you think about it, if you use ChatGPT or Copilot or whatever, like when you ask it a request, you know, it fills out the text. And when you're doing it on the web or in an app, you know, you can see the text start forming so you can start reading it. But the AI pen, I imagine, has to wait for the text to fully form. And then it will start reading back the answer to whatever your query was. And it takes a while. And so you could see in this video, oftentimes, there was one time one of the girls who were presenting, she said a request and didn't immediately speak after. And it felt like you were sitting there for a while. This was her prompt. And so, you know, that's interesting. Also, a lot of the features like catch up, which will basically tell you like catch up about your day, that might include text messages and events or whatever, and asking it to search your text message conversations sounds like really cool features, but it would mean you have to use the AI pen for all of your conversations for it to really be useful. Because if you have a different phone number for the AI pen, it does not sync with your phone like an Apple Watch. This is like a whole different phone number. It would be green bubbles if you were texting iPhone users, just SMSs. So if you wanted to use those features like catch up or summarize my text messages for the day, that means you will have to have been texting from the AI pen all day, every day. And again, I just do not see pretty much anyone doing that in reality. And so a lot of these features, I think, remains to be seen how useful they will be for all of us that have phones, which is everyone. So
yeah.
We'll see. Did you watch
it? I think it was The Verge. I think it was Allison Johnson's review where she was at a demo of it. Yes. And like they would tell the thing to do something. And just like you said, the person who was giving the demo would keep moving on to talk about something else. And then like 45 seconds later, the pin would respond and be like, oh, you should go to dinner here or what? I don't remember the exact scenario was. And then at one point, the thing just overheated and shut off because it's like, nope, working too hard. Sorry, I can't answer that particular question. So there are certainly, like, I think that it's fascinating. And I think that there are some real world benefits to this type of a device. I just wonder whether or not this one is going to hit that tipping point because of the because of those limitations, and we are so used to instant responses, even from Siri, which is not obviously instant, but we're just so used to being, if it fails you, at least it just, its fail mode is, here's a list of links on the web, right? Which is very familiar to all of us. If this thing, what's the fail mode? It just doesn't give you a response, or it shuts down because it worked too hard and needs to take a nap or something. So I don't know. I think I'm really interested to hear what you think about it. I agree with you. People should not order them right now until people like you who did order them actually get them, not just for the sake of seeing the reviews, just for the sake of making sure that like they're actually putting them in boxes and giving them to UPS and they're showing up at people's houses.
And they were showing them packaged up to be shipped from the factory. So I think it's really happening. Two other just funny moments. Apparently the OS for the pin is called Cosmos or Cosmos. Mm. I don't know, man. That feels a little too punny for me. But you got Cosmos. And then at one point, Imran, you know, he was a little better in this video than previous videos. And again, he was formerly of Apple. You can go back and watch him for, I think, the iPhone 6 keynote or 5 keynote, like, you know. Both co-founders originally worked at Apple or previously. And he says in the middle of the video, there's a green field in front of us. And then he just goes on to keep talking about the pin. And it was very like, that should have been my quote for the opening of the episode. It was very like Obi-Wan. Like, I don't know what you mean. I guess, is that the Windows XP desktop? Is that your hope for the future of AI pins? I don't know. So anyway, if you're interested, watch the video. I will be wearing it. If it arrives April 11th, whatever podcast we record after that, I'll wear it. I'll put it right here, and I'll just keep asking it things throughout the whole podcast to bug Jason.
It's
going to
be such good podcasting. It's going to be wonderful. It's gonna be great. I can't wait.
It's going to be great. It has the audio bubble or whatever. I don't even know.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, let us know what you think of the Humane AI pin, but I'm excited to review it. I'm going to wear it around and see what people think of it. Real quick, before we take a quick break, and we're going to talk about the iPad rumors, where are the new iPads in our long-term review of Apple Vision Pro and the MacBook Air, Mr. Beast signed, I think, his first big deal with a streaming company. It is a $100 million deal with Amazon. He's going to be making a contest-type reality show for the streaming platform, much like a lot of the videos he does on his own channel. I think this is interesting for several reasons. I mean, one, he was already the biggest YouTuber, making a ton of money, but he also spends a ton of money on videos. If you watch him in some of the Colin and Samir interviews, he talks about he spends upwards of like $3 million sometimes on his videos, which if you watch them, he's like going to private islands and he's like driving trains into a ditch. So I imagine that stuff costs a lot of money to do.
Yeah.
Maybe he's tired of spending his own money, and so he wants to spend somebody else's money like Amazon. But it's a $100 million deal. It's going to be, the show is going to give away the winner, which Mr. Beast usually gives large sums of money to whoever wins his contest. There's going to be a $5 million prize, which is going to be the biggest game show prize ever, which I would expect nothing less from a Mr. Beast game show. It has to be the biggest and most ever.
Yeah.
And he also said he went to Amazon because they're going to give him basically full creative control, meaning Amazon's not going to apparently force his hand in any way or control the product. They're totally going to give Mr. Beast full access. And Jimmy Donaldson is Mr. Beast's real name. So what did you think about this? You had the article.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the Colin and Samir interview that he did. It's about an hour. It's a little over an hour long. And it was interesting that like that was how he chose to sort of announce this. I should just clarify, like the reporting, I think Puck first reported back in January that the deal was going to be worth $100 million. He wouldn't exactly confirm that, but he also didn't not confirm it when he was talking to Colin Sear. So it seems pretty clear that that's roughly what the deal was worth. But the reason I actually wrote about it was listening to him talk, it was pretty clear that there are any number of streaming services that probably could have and would have given him the same amount of money. The thing that he really cared about was that Amazon was willing to give him full creative control. And I guess I have to give credit to Amazon because we have picked on Amazon Prime Video for like a while now, because it's like, it's sort of the streaming service. I saw someone post recently on Threads. They were talking about the maybe it could have been X. I can't remember. It doesn't matter. But the person was talking about the, like, he went to Amazon instead of Netflix, and their take was like how bad that was going to be for Netflix because Amazon is the second largest streaming service, which is technically true, but that's only because of the 200 million people who subscribe to Amazon Prime and get it by default. So when you count those, like, I don't think that's how many people are consciously paying for Prime Video. And in fact, they're probably like, oh, wow, there's a streaming service over there. That's really cool. But I think it's actually a sign, like, there was a time where people were going to Netflix from the studios because it was the place where they had creative control. Mm-hmm. At the DealBook Summit, Shonda Rhimes, who, you know, created, you know, Grey's Anatomy and, you know, a bunch of other shows, went to Netflix to do shows because she saw the, it is a way to sort of break away from that studio system and to have more creative control. And now this is sort of like the extension or the finale of that, where like the guy who's coming from YouTube, and there's no question that people will watch the show wherever he puts it. The guy has 240 some million subscribers. He, in the last year alone, he had over 3 billion views. I don't know anything about YouTube. You do, but I think that's a lot. Like, that feels like a very lot, right?
It's a lot. It's a very lot. Yes.
But think about it. Like, he has as many subscribers as Netflix does. Like, this guy has the same platform as Netflix. Now, there's a slight difference because it doesn't cost you anything to subscribe to a YouTube channel. But the point is, he has the audience. And so the fact that Netflix was not willing to give that kind of creative control, I think, is kind of a bad sign for Netflix. It's like, you've basically just become a studio, right? Like, and Amazon, Amazon has nothing to lose because no one knows they have a streaming service. Like, they can just do it. Like, just here's $100 million. Make us something great, and we trust you to do it. So
I am very curious how and if his audience will follow him, because as we talked about last week with the whole TikTok thing, it is very hard if you've built an audience on a platform, whether that's TikTok or YouTube, like Mr. Beast, to then translate that audience out. Now, Mr. Beast has done it because Mr. Beast Burger, Mr. Beast Feastables Chocolates, he does sell millions of those things as well. So he actually translated his online audience to the real world with real physical products, namely chocolate bars and burgers. So if anybody could do it, it's probably Mr. Beast. But I am curious how, because honestly, like, buying a chocolate bar at a gas station that you're passing through and from a brand you recognize, okay, actually going to a different streaming service that you might have never used before just to watch a bespoke show from, even if it's your favorite creator, I'm curious how that audience, if it will move and what percentage of it will move. And if Amazon will see some kind of spike in signups. Again, like, I think, I feel like everybody has it because everybody has Amazon Prime delivery anyway. I have Amazon Prime. I have not watched anything on it in over a year, probably. So I did watch Rings of Power. I did watch Rings of Power, and Rings of Power is coming back this summer. So
it's also terrible. They spent $715 million on that. I think I made that point in the article that it's like, Amazon has nothing to lose. Look how much money they spend on a Lord of the Rings spinoff. And it was bad. It was just not even good.
I'm not saying it's to the quality of the, like, the original trilogy or even the Hobbit trilogy, but I don't know if it's horrible. Cinematography is good.
Is it to the quality of $715 million? Like,
I don't know. I got to rewatch it. Ask me after season two.
You don't have to rewatch it. Most people, that was another stat that I saw, that most people didn't even make it through a third of the episodes before they bailed.
Really? Yeah. Now, also, I understand if you're a Lord of the Rings, like, faithful and you've read the Silmarillion or whatever, I think people had more problems with it with the more background knowledge they had. I do not have those. I did not
there
read the
are,
books.
I don't mean to derail this conversation, but don't let anyone tell you that they've actually read the Silmarillion. Like, no, because it is not, they have not. You might as well read Beowulf. I was in New York City a couple years ago when the J.P. Morgan Library had a Tolkien exhibit, and I'm actually a big, like, one of my favorite books I've ever read was a Tolkien autobiography, and anyway, I went to the whole thing, and they had copies of a lot of his original drawings for Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, and they had copies of a lot of different things. And I just want to know that even the most diehard of his fans, don't let them tell you. Very few people have actually read. It's a hard read. It's a very hard read.
I've heard it's hard. I have not tried it. If you've read the Silmarillion, leave us a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts, and Don't look up how to spell Cimmerillion. Oh, you have to be able to spell it without looking it up. That's the proof that you've read it. So.
I was just going to say, the reason it's not really canon is because it was published after his death by his son. No shade to his son, Christopher, but it's like, I don't know. Anyway, so moving on. Sorry for derailing us.
I think today's bonus episode is going to be about Lord of the Rings. I didn't have a plan yet. So.
I can't wait.
I think it'd be about that. All right. So I want to talk about, where are the iPads? And Apple has some more legal troubles. But before we do, I want to take a second and thank our members who don't hear this, but you who have not supported us yet. This thank you is for you, because when you start supporting the show, you get an ad-free version, meaning this section, it'll jump right to the iPad stuff. This will be cut out, as any future ads and sponsorships will be, because those who support the show get the ad-free version, and you get bonus episodes every week. And if you support the show, you can do it directly in Apple Podcasts for $5 a month or $50 a year, or you can do it through Memberful at primarytech.fm and click bonus episodes. You get the full back catalog of bonus episodes right now, where we talk about all kinds of fun stuff like EVs, talk about physical media. Jason went to, we don't know what conference he went to. It was either Zoso or South by Southwest. You can listen to last week's episode for that. And we're going to correct it in this week's bonus episode, but you get all of that. And so we want to thank you for supporting the show. If you haven't already, you can do that again, directly in Apple Podcasts or at primarytech.fm. Or if you can't do that, again, a 5-star rating and review and subscribing to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/@primarytechshow. And we would greatly appreciate it. And either way, thank you for listening to Primary Technology. Jason, where are the iPads? Where are the iPads?
I came prepared. I have a lot of iPads right here. That doesn't even make my iPad Pro is over here. I've got a mini.
I got my mini
I've
right
got
here.
A, this is a ninth gen. This is a ninth gen right here. So it just Jake. This looks like an iPad, right? It's a ninth gen.
Yeah.
And then all I also the have right here. My favorite iPad. Listen, I have my favorite iPad of all time. This is one of the original iPad Airs. The original iPad Air? I mean, come on.
The original iPad. Now, the original iPad Air 2 was one of the best, because that one got a lot faster than the original. And I will say, maybe we're going to talk about iPads for the bonus episode, because I got a lot of emotions and thoughts about iPads. That's going to be the bonus episode. We'll talk more about our history of iPads. But there's been rumors that Apple is going to announce new iPads, and Mac Rumors, 9to5 Mac, they're all saying it's going to happen. And then, this is hilarious, Mac Rumors posted Apple to announce new iPads on March 26th, and Mark Gurman just quote tweeted it and said, not true.
Yeah. Think about the level of confidence you have to have as the preeminent rumor-ish person to just be like, nah, nice try, guys.
just two words, not true, which is just, I just laugh so hard. And then Mac Rumors posted like a follow-up saying, oh, okay, yeah, I guess not the 26th, or the 9to5 Mac. Claim of iPad announcement on March 26th, not true. Mac Rumors, 9to5 Mac guys, they're all great. And I'm sure there was lots of talk in a Slack channel about this. I just thought it was hilarious. Anyway, supposedly, I mean, again, Apple did not update a single iPad in 2023. We went an entire year, no iPad updates. Okay, that's fine. M2 iPad Pro is really good. M1 iPad Air is really good. We got a newish iPad just right before the new year. So, okay, we need some new iPads, Jason. And I know people are I post about this stuff on the different social medias, and people are like, what do you even want in a new iPad? Why do you even care? You get an M2 iPad Pro right now. It's an amazing machine. Like, you should not want anything more. What's that song? You Can Ask for Anything More? Is that a Annie? I forget. Anyway.
I got to catch up on my musical theater references. I got the movie references down. Now I got to do musical theater too.
Yeah. So here's what I want, which is a Godfather quote. What I want is a guarantee. No more attempts on my father's life. No. So what I want from new iPads, first of all, the rumors are that there's going to be, might go OLED. So the iPad Pro at least will have an OLED screen, which would be better than the mini LED, which is only in the 12.9-inch model right now. There's been recent rumors that there might be a matte screen option, both a glossy and matte screen, which first, this is a newish rumor. That'll be interesting. We have nano texture options on the Pro Display XDR. But other than that, there's not been a matte screen option since 2011, maybe? You used to be able to get a matte screen MacBook Pro, like matte or glossy. Do you remember that? You could choose one or the other.
On the MacBook Pro? I do not. I mean, I know you could do it on the studio display in the XDR, but maybe you're right. You know what? Was it? Maybe it wasn't the MacBook Pro. Was that the MacBook? Man.
I think you could. Hold on. Last model, MacBook Pro with matte screen. I have to, this is the real-time searching.
Yeah,
the
we're not very good at this.
The last time there was a MacBook Pro sold with a matte display finish was 2013. So you could get a 2013 MacBook Pro. It was non-Retina, because I remember I actually got a MacBook Pro in 2012, and it was the first Retina screen. 2012 was the first time you could get a Retina screen MacBook Pro. It was the unibody style, but there was no Retina and matte. But there was still a base level MacBook Pro that didn't have a Retina screen that you could get with a matte screen. And that was the option on checkout. Like, you could do that. So I'm trying to find any pictures or evidence of this. I'm pretty sure this was the case. But anyway, so new iPads might have matte screen, which seems very strange to me. I don't know how that would work with a laminate type display on an iPad. But you have that. M3 obviously is an upgrade. Here's why I want new iPads. Number one, my main iPad, my only iPad right now is this iPad mini. This is a 3-year-old iPad, and the display is still kind of meh. No promotion. The weather widget is still janky. And I edit this podcast on this iPad. I edit the audio version in Ferret on this, and it's fine. It can do it. I miss promotion on my larger iPad. I talked about that saga of how there was an iPad in my house dropped on the sleep button and now it's broken. Anyway, so I don't have, this is my only iPad right now. I didn't drop it, just for the record. Anyway, so I want to get a big iPad Pro again. I've gotten the 12.9-inch model the last 2 years because it was the only one with the mini LED screen, or XDR display as Apple calls it. If you wanted to get the 11-inch iPad Pro, it did not have that better screen. So I am hoping, now that I've used an iPad mini as my only iPad for a while, I want a bigger screen, but not that much bigger, because I have a 14-inch MacBook Pro. So what I want is an 11-inch M3 iPad Pro with an OLED display, same display that'll be on the bigger one, so I'm not sacrificing any display quality on the 11-inch, and a new Magic Keyboard, maybe with a function row of keys, at least a keyboard backlight button to be able to adjust keyboard backlight on those function keys. I would love that. And honestly, that would be enough for me. Maybe we get a third gen Apple Pencil. Who knows? That's not as important to me, but it would be cool to see what Apple does there. Oh, and the camera moved to the right orientation, because the base model iPad right now that you get for like $499 or whatever has the camera on the long edge. You talked about this because you reviewed it. The camera's on the long edge, and that's where it needs to be on the iPad Air and the iPad Pro. That's why I hope they move that as well. That's why I want new iPads.
Okay.
Case closed.
Okay, so quick follow-up. Mac yes. Tracker, fantastic app. Absolutely yes. Essential. Does say that there was a 15-inch display, 1680 by 1050, that had glossy or anti-glare. So maybe that would be what we're talking about. Yes. Like, I don't know. I don't know what that means. But anyway, so we are confirming that Steven is not completely crazy. I don't know whether they called it matte display or whatever. But anyway, onto the iPads. This is easy for me, although I am curious why. The iPad mini is the only one, in my opinion, that is desperately overdue for some kind of an update. But it's still, I have an iPad mini. I love it. I can't figure out what I should use it for, because every time I try to use it to read books on a Kindle app or something, I get distracted. And so I just pull out the actual Kindle, like an actual Kindle to read books on. So I do think that the iPad mini could use an update. Everything else, literally the only thing I care about is put the camera in the right spot. That's the only change that they need to make. Like, you could put the M3 in the MacBook, in the iPad Pro, but it's an iPad. It has an M2 in it already. What? I don't understand what the problem is. The iPad Air has an M1 in it, right? I don't think they've updated that to the M2 yet. No, because they released two generations of MacBook Pro since they've released a single new iPad. So I don't understand. I do agree it's been too long. I think that it'd be great, but honestly, people talk about the iPad right now as needing updates desperately, but it just really doesn't. The 10th generation iPad, amazing, right? They updated the form factor so it looks like the rest of them, and they put the camera in the right spot. Other than the weird dongle thing you have to use to charge the Apple Pencil, the first generation Apple Pencil, beyond that, it has USB-C. It's great. You can still buy the 9th gen iPad if you want to save a little bit of money. The iPad Air is fantastic. The iPad Pros, yeah, I mean, OLED displays would be great. All of those things, I just feel like, man, I don't know. It's an iPad, in the things that we do with iPads. Like, what do we need an OLED display for editing podcasts? Probably, like, you want to, you know, like, watching. Be able to see those waveforms? Watching podcasts?
No. Yes, you can watch this podcast. No, listen, when I had my 12.9-inch M2, there were some times where I just wanted to watch something, and until maybe Apple Vision Pro, which we'll talk about in a second, it was the best screen in my house. Like, the mini LED screen on the 12.9-inch iPad Pro was amazing. And if you're going to watch something that was very dark, like it had very black blacks, like that screen was the best just for like
it's
watching.
It's not better than your MacBook Pro.
I guess not. Is it mini LED? Is the new MacBook Pro mini LED?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're HDR.
I just like the iPad screen better. There's no notch. You know what I mean? Anyway.
If they put the camera in the right spot, there's going to be a notch on the next iPad. Just you watch.
Oh, that would be interesting. Oh, also smaller bezels is the other rumor. But I've also heard from a couple birdies that supposedly know other birdies. So this is like double hearsay, but that Apple might not continue or update the iPad mini, which would be very unfortunate. But if you look at their other product lines, like the iPhone mini has gone away. There's usually two sizes, you know, the regular and the plus, or the pro and the pro max. And they might just go to two size iPads, 11 inch, 13 inch across the pro, the air and the base model, which I know there's a lot of iPad mini fans out there. I actually did a video with a pilot several years ago with Apple Insider. And like, that is one use case where the iPad mini is like the de facto device, because in these smaller planes with very tiny cockpits, the iPad mini like is the only one that'll fit a lot of times and is ideal for them. Honestly, like, they probably don't care for an update. Like, the current iPad mini is probably fine for them. But this thing is also $600 now, 3 years later. You know, it's not like you get a discount. So I don't know. I would like to just see them do something. Change the camera orientation. Give me an 11-inch. That would be nice. And follow up to the follow up. I have found a sketchy video here. No, isn't that sketchy? But these were the two options for the MacBook Pro. And so you had the glossy screen on the right, and Apple did call it the anti-glare screen. They didn't call it a matte screen. That's kind of what the vernacular was for everybody that covered it. But if you got the anti-glare screen option on the MacBook Pro, it would look like the one on the left. You wouldn't have the black bezel around the display, and it would still be the older style matte display, which, if you remember, before 2008, fall 2008 was the first unibody MacBook Pro. And from there forward, it was the black bezel around the screen, glossy display by default. And they just offered the anti-glare for a couple years after that. It seems like 2013 might have been the last year, but that's what it looked like on the left. It had the silver bezels, matte or anti-glare display. And I feel justified.
And I think that was actually the year they introduced the Retina, right? So they introduced Retina, and then they kept the previous option as an option. You could get a non-Retina that was the anti-glare. And probably it would defeat the purpose of having Retina density of pixels and then also have an anti-glare coating over it. Like, that just defeats the purpose.
Yeah. And to be like, the anti-glare matte displays, you don't get as much color definition. Like, you don't get like the P3 color gamut and all that kind of stuff, just because the display technology, whatever, it's not as sharp. Saturated, I'm not sure, but that's why it eventually went away. But you know what? I'll put that video in the show notes because I just want everybody to know I remembered.
I appreciate that.
I remembered.
I'm glad.
Anyway, and we might not see new iPads till April, which it's unfortunate, but that seems like what it's going to be. And finally, before we talk about Apple Vision Pro M3 MacBook Air, Apple has some more legal troubles, not only in the EU, but also here in the US, that the Justice Department here in the United States about to sue Apple for antitrust violations. And this is also from pressure from Meta, Microsoft X, Spotify, all kind of coming against Apple's new App Store policies. I think the crux of it was that Apple was still going to be charging a percentage transaction fee, even for purchases outside of their in-app payment system. So if you did add like a third-party payment system in your app, Apple was still going to take a 27% cut instead of 30. So you saved 3% or whatever. And now everyone's speaking against it. And so United States Justice Department, another antitrust violation. I know you had more articles about it. What do you think?
Well, yeah. So there are two separate things. Well, just real quickly. The first one is we talked before about the fact that the likelihood is that Apple was going to be sued. The latest reporting from Bloomberg is it's going to happen today. So we haven't had a chance to read it. So everything we say right now will be completely obsolete in probably 20 or 30 minutes. So we won't say a whole lot. We'll probably have more to talk about this when we actually see the case. But essentially, the Justice Department is alleging, you know, that Apple has sort of leveraged its platform and is a monopoly, and that they are going to be, you know, this isn't the first time Apple has been sued over antitrust particular issues, you know, but right. The point is, like, the crux of the issue here is, I understand, anyone have to wait to see the lawsuit, are things like, why can't other payment apps use the NFC chip, right? Or why can't, like, there are features and capabilities that are built into the phone that only Apple is able to take advantage of, which disadvantages competitors to Apple's particular products. And it's the same idea where it's like, if you own the platform, you shouldn't be able to use the platform to advantage your own products and not make those things available to other products. And so not a whole lot more we can say about that until we actually read it. The other one is interesting because Meta, Microsoft X, Match, which is, you know, all the dating sites, that kind of thing, have filed an actual briefing to protest Apple's compliance with the DMA, right? They are not happy with the way that Apple is... Actually, I don't even know if it was the DMA. I guess it was like I'm sorry. I got all that wrong. You can edit this out if you want. This is, they are protesting the essentially the concession that Apple had to make as a result of the Fortnite case, right? Mm-hmm. Which involved linking out to other
anti-steering.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. See, this is what I have steering here, or Steven here for. And they are like, no, Apple is not even complying with either the letter or the spirit of that particular ruling because of what you described. Like, they're being very restrictive in how you can send customers out, and they're still going to collect the same amount of money. And the argument that is being made is that is not reflective of either the letter of the law or the spirit. And I just thought it was interesting. Yeah. Like, Meta, okay, I understand. Like, they're not big fans of Apple, although at the same time, they don't sell apps, right? They don't charge for their apps, so I don't know why that's as big of a deal, with the exception of the fact that Apple's going to start charging for in-app boosting of posts. So maybe there's that piece of it. Microsoft and Apple are not like arch enemies anymore, right? They do a whole lot of stuff. So Spotify and Match Group have been a part of this from the beginning, so I can understand that. I just thought it was interesting, like, Apple's not making any friends, right? And even the people you think might be their friends are definitely not happy with the way that they're conducting themselves.
Well, and I do think this might be another step in the direction of the United States passing legislation like the European Commission with the DMA, Digital Markets Act, where Apple might have to allow third-party app marketplaces here in the US. Because now there's precedent, like, yeah, it's over there in the EU, even sideloading, downloading an app via a website, like true sideloading in the EU. And so I think, I don't know how long it'll take, I don't know how many years, but I imagine eventually it's going to be coming here to the States as well. And this seems like kind of the first step towards that. Anyway, yeah, not making any friends.
Yeah, I just think Apple needs to look at it, and yeah, they're not. And they should just look and say, like, what's the ultimate end goal? Let's just do that. Like, come on.
Right.
Let's go to that. Let's just make the concessions and make everyone happy so we can move on with our lives.
Exactly. All right, personal tech. Let's do some long-term reviews of the Apple Vision Pro, which I don't, you know what? Do I even have mine around here? Hold on. I got to find
it. It doesn't even know where it is.
I got to find it.
That's a really
good. It's over here.
Only thing you need to say about your long-term review right there. That was brutal. I don't even know where it is. I have a $4,000 computer and I can't remember where it is. It's great.
Well, it doesn't have Find My. There's no Find My, so I can't even do precision tracking. I can't even find it. Listen, so this it's a long-term review, but it's not going to be a long review. Listen, I use the thing once a week, if not less, because here's the deal. I know there's some people online, they're like, I work in Apple Vision Pro 8 hours a day and my eyeballs love it or whatever. I am not one of those people. I shared my Mac screen multiple times, both my Mac Studio and my MacBook Pro to work. It's cool. It's more useful for my MacBook Pro if I'm like editing video and I just want a larger canvas, because it's helpful when editing video to just have more display space. It is more useful, but I still prefer just editing on my studio display. The studio display is like perfect size for me in editing. Like, it's great. So I don't prefer to work in it. I don't prefer to be in it that long, like 6 to 8 hours. I don't prefer that. And watching movies is great. There was a moment, I think it was last week, where it was the evening. I was by myself and I was like, I'm going to watch something. I can get my Apple Vision Pro out and like do the whole thing. I've been using the Waterfield case now, so I have to take the solo knit loop off to put it in the case. I was like, do I want to put it all together, put the solo knit in, put it on the battery, wait for it to start up? Because if you don't use it every day, it takes like a minute to start up after you plug in the battery. And then do I want to do all that? Do I just want to watch it on the TV that's right in front of me right now? And it would take me 5 seconds to get the thing to watch. So I didn't even watch it. Even then, the ideal scenario where I would watch it, that has happened multiple times. And some of those times I have got Vision Pro out and done it. But it's just so, there's so much friction to just getting to experiencing something in Vision Pro and so limited use cases for it. The only use case that I prefer right now is watching something. And the friction to get to watching something on Apple Vision Pro, which there's still no Netflix app, I'm not going to do it in the web browser. Like using Safari and Apple Vision Pro is like not a great experience. It's hard, like typing on the, I just don't want to do it. So even watching something, there's enough friction where I don't desire to do it. Now I'm traveling next week, going to Podcast Movement in the hotel. Maybe Apple Vision Pro is going to like, it's going to be great there because it'll be my content. We'll see how it works with like captive Wi-Fi networks. I'm curious how well that's going to work where, you know, you have to like log into your hotel room or whatever. So
yeah. Yeah.
Traveling might be the killer use case. Everybody who posts a video of Apple Vision Pro on a plane is like, says it's amazing. It's great. Quinn Nelson from Snazzy Labs, he recently posted it. He was like, yep, use it on a plane. It was cool. Got some funny looks, but yeah, that was fun. But honestly, like I just don't find use cases for it. And watching something is the cool use case, but I just don't do it very often, like once a week or less. So if you were thinking about getting one, maybe not right now, go do the demo in the Apple Store. You can get the wow factor. And then wait for a much cheaper version or more use cases and apps down the road. But yeah, that has been my experience. And
also, if you're thinking about getting one, make Steven an offer because he has one available that doesn't get used very often.
Listen, if there's an update or whatever, I got a screenshot. You know, I have to put it on to screenshot the software update screen or whatever, so I can post that on social media.
Yeah, that's a good reason to spend $4,000 on a computer is to take screenshots to put on social media.
Maybe VisionOS 2.0. Maybe it'll be amazing. I don't know.
I also just want to say that anybody who is taking photos of themselves wearing one on an airplane and saying it's amazing is only wearing it on an airplane so that they can take a photo of themselves wearing it on an airplane so they can post it on social media to say that it's amazing. Let's just be real honest here. So I actually asked, I may write about this at some point because I had a really interesting conversation with the flight attendant. First of all, almost no one is wearing these things on airplanes. You would think that they were if you live in like the tech bubble like us where people post about it all the time. But I've asked them and the flight attendants just think you're weird. If you wear one on a plane, the flight attendants think that you're just bonkers. And so not that that's a reason not to, because there's a whole lot of people that are bonkers on airplanes. That's fine. But I just, anyway, so all right, that was the Vision Pro. I, on the other hand, have been living with the MacBook Air, which I do know where it is. It is right here. I still have it. It's right here. And it's, I was just picked it up and noticed, honestly, the fingerprints aren't that bad. I think the coating part of the fingerprints is good. It's just, it's dark, right? And so darker materials like this are just going to show them more. I will say, and I think, Steven, I may have said this to you at one point, but I think that the M3 MacBook Air was the computer that I was sort of waiting for. And I've been using the M3 Max MacBook Pro. So I am not using, I mean, I'm not hurting for computer, right? It's the best computer, I think. Right now, I would argue it's the best computer that Apple is making. And the thing I think constantly is, if I could get more than 25 gigs or 24 gigs of memory in a MacBook Air, it would be a deal. I'd sell my office and I'd just buy one. It'd be a deal breaker. Like, it is.
What do you need that much gigs for? Tabs?
Future proofing. Because honestly, I think if I could get 32 or 64 gigs of memory in a MacBook, in an M3 MacBook Air with 2 terabyte storage, I would probably buy it and plan to use it for a very, very long time. 32, I'd be happy with. I don't need 64 in a MacBook Air because the stuff, I mean, I do like podcasting. I do some things where I do take advantage. I was using Whisper yesterday and that's the first time I've heard the fan spin up on this MacBook Pro. Like it's because it's doing on device, AI, generative AI stuff. Right. And the MacBook Air does all that kind of fine, but it definitely takes a bit longer. I don't know if memory would necessarily help, but it is loading that language model into memory in order to do it. And so I think that everyone knows what the MacBook Air is. It's fantastic. The M3 is amazing. And I think it will, carrying it around to like the South by Southwest, not XOXO, was great instead of carrying around my MacBook Pro. And so I think I probably will be switching back to the MacBook Air. So yeah, it's amazing.
So it's a very good computer. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, it was. I mean, everyone knows that it was a very good computer before, and really, it's the Wi-Fi 6E that pushes me over the edge. That's not true because we've already talked about how slow my internet is right at the moment. So it doesn't
matter. 30 up and
60
down.
Is not gonna. 60 is. Yeah, yeah. Listen, I have fiber at my house. It's just that I'm 40 yards from my house right now. Right, that's right, the problem. Right.
And it's traveling over by carrier pigeon. They're bringing each.
It is my dog just runs back and forth with the internet
carrying that's the bits. So.
Yeah,
that's why there's a delay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm always tempted by the MacBook Air because it looks, I mean, so thin and light, but I have an M3 Pro MacBook Pro and I love it. And I use that SD card slot sometimes and that's enough to just have me keep it. And I do like the display. Again, I guess I'm a display nerd, but I like the mini LED display on the iPad Pro. And I do like the display on the MacBook Pro. And so I don't know if the thinness and lightness is enough trade-off, especially when I'm carrying Apple Vision Pro and USB microphones in my bag anyway. Like the weight difference is probably negligible from, you know, Air to Pro. But I am tempted by it all the time because it does look very
Steven,
nice.
I have a solution for you, though, that would solve your laptop problem, your iPad problem, and probably your Vision Pro problem. Buy an OLED television, and then you'll never have to worry about having the nicest display in your house be on a laptop or an iPad or a Vision Pro. Just buy one. It'll save you so much money because you'll never have to worry about it. Because I like nice displays. We have a very, very nice OLED television. I do agree that the MacBook Pro has an amazing display, and it's also really nice because it gets much brighter. So if you're in a situation where, you know, you're outdoors or whatever, which we're not right now because it's 16 degrees out, but if you're in that, like, it is nice. But the other benefits of the MacBook Air, the fact that it is so light, so thin, so and yet still so powerful, and the battery lasts forever, that's the other thing. The battery lasts because it isn't powering such a high-powered screen. It lasts for such a long time. But if you just buy an OLED television, I mean, you have like two home theater systems. I can't believe you didn't get at least one OLED between the two.
I don't know why. It is a weird thing. Like I've spent money on a Dolby Atmos 7.1 system in one room. I have a Sonos Arc and Sub Mini in another room. For some reason, like I struggle to spend money on TVs. One, because I feel like the gap between the $600 TV. And then if you want to get a nice OLED, you're in like the 3000s. And I don't know. I feel like I don't personally use it, the TV. Like my kids use it more. Like for their video games, they would probably love it. But I actually don't personally use it enough to, like, I guess, justify it. So, and I'm not going to put the nicest TV in our bedroom. I don't know.
Just imagine when Dune 2 comes out on Max, being able to watch that on an OLED. I'm speaking as someone who just watched Dune 1 on an OLED, and I'm just telling you, it's a pretty, people buy new TVs every 10 years. You buy a new laptop every 18 months. I'm just doing the math here. I'm trying to help you out.
You know, when Dune 2 comes out, maybe that'll be the time. I will consider an OLED TV. Because
and we'll know if Steven bought this if his wife forces him to cancel this podcast because I keep talking him into buying things. That's how we'll know.
It is true. All right, we're going to get into our bonus episode. I want to talk about our history with iPads because I think that'll be a fun topic. So if you want to listen to that bonus episode, subscribe on Apple Podcast or go to primarytech.fm, click bonus episodes, and you can support the show there as well. Don't forget 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcast or subscribe. Oh, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/@primarytechshow. All those links are in the show notes. And just so you know, next week's episode, we're going to release it on Friday instead of 30 because I'm at Podcast Movement. Jason's going to another conference. And so we'll be one day delayed next week. So look for that episode Friday. Thanks again for joining us. We'll catch you next time.